What happened was true. The most bizarre and brutal series of crimes in America. This is the movie that is just as real, just as close.
Crazy! You gotta make us stop!
Just as terrifying as being there.
Please.
Even if one of them survives, what will be left? The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. After you stop screaming, you'll start talking about it.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to podcasts on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We are part of the Main Amy Network. If you find more from us, check out the website at themainamy.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themainamy. We're also now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony Lovecki, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Hold on 1 second. I'm just finishing up tubing, and then I'll be able to join you.
Finishing up what?
That. Wait, yeah. Say that again?
Tubin. I thought I should have brought it up beforehand to see if you guys were up on the news, but that's
nope.
Okay.
You should have.
Now you have to explain what's tubin.
Okay, so my whole bit, here's Mark explaining a bit.
Explaining jokes, my favorite part of our podcast is when we explain jokes.
So we'll start
jokes.
Off here. So, did you guys hear about that guy from CNN that got caught jerking it on a Zoom?
Yes.
Yes.
His last name is Tubin.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were talking like water tubing or
so. The joke was going to be you guys would be disgusted thinking I was masturbating, and then my joke would be no, I'm finishing up the 1988 Atari game Tubin for the NES.
Mark,
that was the joke.
Giuliani pushed Tubin right out of the news. Too late.
Well, now,
for that, man.
Question, are you doing that, Mark?
Yeah.
What, the video game? Yes.
Okay. Assume that we're dumb.
Okay.
And we have no clue what's going to happen next.
But to be honest with you, there's been two guys in the news this week that has been jerking it in some form or another, and he was the first one. So I mean, yeah. He kind of, you know,
allegedly.
Yeah, I should have said I was laying back tucking
allegedly.
My seat in.
I don't need us being handed over to the FBI,
sure.
All right?
Sure. Allegedly, Rudy Giuliani was touching his dick. So
we all lay down on the bed to tuck our shirts back in.
That's how I do it.
I don't know if that's true or not. Listen, guys, wink, wink. We're definitely not being tapped right now. So let's just assume the worst at all times.
I can't wait for when this airs 7 days from now and none of this means anything.
Yeah, we've dated this pretty. Oh, yeah, I remember that back in 2020, right at the end of 2020. Yeah, I get that.
We were 3 days away from Halloween, and we're talking about something that happened 2 weeks ago.
In its own right, is pretty scary. So,
yeah,
we're continuing spooky season there.
Yep.
So this is our last episode for 31 Days of Horror, which went by super fast. But before we get into this week's movie, what have you guys been watching?
All right, so I finished up Bly Manor. I don't know if either of you gentlemen have seen it or finished it. The ending is, this whole show was just so, so depressing. And this finale was the most depressing, but not for what reasons you would think. It's a very beautiful ending, I thought. very poignant, but it was like a beautifully macabre, I guess. I enjoyed it a lot. So I finished watching that. And then shifting gears totally, I was recommended to watch Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 from a good friend of ours and a listener, Jim. So thank you so much for that recommendation because it is off the walls insane.
Did you watch 1 and 2 beforehand?
Surprisingly, there are no 1 and 2. This is, this is the first one. Dude Bro Party Massacre 3 is, Dude Bro Party Massacre 1. But they explain in the prologue how there were two massacres before it that I guess it just they skim over it, but it's so over the top gory and it's shot, it looks like it's on a 90s VHS tape, so there's like infomercials that play in between certain scenes. It's really fun. I think you guys, maybe not Mark, but I think Anthony would enjoy it. But you know, if you get a chance to watch it, watch it. And I know I've watched other things. I watched Scare Me the other night. I think you reviewed that, Ant, right? I wasn't particularly happy with it. I didn't hate it. I expected it to be different. Like, it wasn't scary at all, but I liked the idea of it, how everything is, like, it's all senses, auditory, and a lot of visuals, and they never cut away. So I thought it was an interesting idea. But, yeah. I think that's pretty much it.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, no, I haven't really been watching anything. Basically, I spent this whole week preparing for our next session of our D&D game by watching as much and reading as much D&D stuff, just so I can make it good for the audience out there. So no movies for me.
Okay. That was nice and quick. I've been watching a lot of stuff because, as we mentioned, it's 31 Days of Horror. So I think the last time we went on a tangent about holidays, but since then I've watched Hatchet, Q the Winged Serpent, which I kind of loved, Mortuary Collection, which was a fun kind of Creepshow-esque story. I watched the 2019 CG cartoon The Addams Family. I also watched Frankenweenie, the CG cartoon film. I also watched two movies that I have refused to watch because the endings have been spoiled for me. Watched The Others,
okay,
and The Village.
Oh, that's right. I was getting angry at you for The Village.
So The Village doesn't suck. This is 16 years after the hype. M. Night Shyamalan is an embarrassment, more or less. The Village is fine. I could understand why some people would be upset watching it in 2004. There's all this hype surrounding it. But if you take a step back, you haven't watched it in 16 years since it's been out, and finally watch it, it's solid. I think the ending kind of just happens without much fanfare. Like, it just sort of, you know, the reveal happens and it's just not like this shoe drop moment where, like, he tries to do it like he did with The Sixth Sense, where it's like you realize it and then it's like smashes you over the head with it. It just kind of happens and it's like, okay, well, there's not much to it, I think.
Yeah, it's very lackluster.
Yeah, but it's fine. The Others, very good movie, but I knew what the ending was. It's kind of also informed me for all these similar kind of haunted house movies, especially with Bly Manor. I went in just thinking, like, I'm going to assume everyone's dead, and you could tell me otherwise.
That's what Jen was thinking, too. It was like, we're just going to find out that they all died.
Yeah. So that's it. Other movies I watched, The Mask of the Red Death with Vincent Price. It's a little timely about a prince that ignores a plague and just holds up in his house with all his rich friends.
Just partying down, man.
Yep. Ignoring it, hoping it goes away, assuming that you could just be rich and it won't affect you is more or less what happens.
Yeah, it's just like, if I can't hear it or I can't see it, it's not happening.
Yeah. I feel like there's more. I feel like there's more things that I've watched with my wife. Oh, we watched The Guest, which is sort of horror, but not quite.
I don't know if I've heard that.
Oh. The Guest is on Netflix. It's interesting. It's kind of really, it's kind of schlocky, kind of Carpenter-esque, but not 100% horror. It's a fun watch, though.
Okay. It sounds familiar. Yeah. I can't quite place it. Maybe I'm thinking of, what's that movie with not Logan Marshall Green is in it?
The Invitation?
The Invitation. That's
we
what
also
I'm thinking
watched
of.
That. Yeah, actually.
I like that movie.
That's a good one. But yeah. I think we watched it like two nights in a row. We watched The Invitation, then we watched The Guest. Two very different movies. The Guest is interesting. You might like it.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. I was told to watch, is there a Nicolas Cage movie on Netflix where he and his wife try to kill their kids?
I think it's called Mom and Dad.
Yeah, Mom and Dad. On Hulu. Okay, I don't have that. Damn it. Because I've heard from a few different people at work that it's a solid watch.
Gotcha. Do not watch Mandy if you haven't already.
Ugh. Yeah, that movie, such a disappointment. It was like, oh, it's Nick Cage at his Nick Cagiest, and it's out there, and like, oh, I can't wait to watch this, and it's just like, oh, this is such a slow burn, and he's not even at his cagiest.
Right. Yeah, you hear Nicolas Cage gets into a chainsaw fight with somebody, you're like, holy shit, this is going to be the greatest exploitation movie ever. And it's like, it's just sad.
Yeah, but not like good sad.
No.
It's just like, this is...
We're going to overcomplicate things by making everything a metaphor.
Yeah.
Well, I guess someone's got to make a payment on that pyramid.
Right.
It's the only thing the tax guys can't touch.
They took his dinosaur skull away from him.
Only thing the IRS can't take away from you is your headstone. It's good advice, guys.
Yeah, you live life every day, right? Like it's your last. Yep. Can't take it with you.
That's about everything I've watched, except for this week's movie. And this was a poll, so we decided that we were going to do, for our last episode for 31 Days of Horror this year, we were going to do a poll like we did last year. And we pitted four movies against each other. One from the 70s, one from the 80s, one from the 90s, and one from 2000 and beyond. So 70s was Texas Chainsaw Massacre. 80s was The Evil Dead. 90s was Brain Dead/ Dead Alive, the Peter Jackson movie. And The Cabin in the Woods was our fourth one. So Evil Dead got into an early lead, was eventually taken over by Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Cabin in the Woods made a late showing, but in the end, it was Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So, guys, where are you coming from with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
I've seen the original a few times, but it had been a while. It'd probably been 5+ years since I'd watched it. I've seen the remake, the Jessica Biel remake. I've seen the second one, which was, I believe, also directed by Tobe Hooper.
Correct.
And that's the last one I saw. But as I mentioned prior to the recording, we seem to have this weird, we have a third eye, essentially, where we can predict movies that are going to be remade. Mm-hmm. We did it first with He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. We recorded it, and I think the next day, Kevin Smith announced, oh yeah, we're making He-Man Masters of the Universe cartoon. So we did the poll, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1, and just, I think, 2 days ago, or depending on when this is released, last week, it was announced that they are remaking the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So when are we going to get our dues, essentially, is what I'm asking. Like, when are you guys going to stop ripping us off?
Exactly.
Get your own ideas, you know?
I mean, we should say that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre has been rebooted and redone about 3 or 4 times. There's also the Alexander Daddario starring Texas Chainsaw from 2010, I want to say.
Is that a reboot as well?
It's like a sort of sequel slash reboot.
Okay.
But Alexander Daddario's in it.
Yeah, she's mighty fine.
What about you, Mark? Where are you coming from, Texas Chainsaw?
I have heard about this movie, hanging around with you guys and other people. Never seen it. I'm always wary about 70s horror movies, just because the fact they, and even some early 80s ones, where it's like, I don't know what I'm getting into going in, whether it'll be good or bad. It seems like there's no middle ground. For this one, I was excited to get in and see what all the hype was about, and then waited for the final half hour, and I guess we'll get into that.
Okay. I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I want to say like 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago. I bought it kind of sight unseen on DVD, nice steelbook DVD, and I watched it, and I haven't seen it since. I don't love this movie. First, I was surprised how not graphic it is while also being graphic.
Yeah.
But like, I was misremembering how gory it is in this movie. The one scene where like she gets propped up on the meat hook, mm-hmm. I misremembered that you don't see it going in.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see in all gory detail that meat hook goes right through her chest, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. That there's the, chainsaw for the handicapped kid.
Yep.
You hear the chainsaw and that's it. You don't see any, like, you see a little spray of blood. It's bloody, quote unquote, but not very bloody.
Right. Like they cut away from it. It's like, it's unpleasant. The last half hour is, it's sadistic, and it's very much what Rob Zombie saw and was like, I'm going to make A House of 1,000 Corpses, and this is the movie I'm going to make. Even down to like the opening credits, I was like, this kind of feels like House of 1,000 Corpses to me.
I was thinking there's a generation of kids out there that probably saw House of 1,000 Corpses first and then saw Texas Chainsaw. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This is just House of 1,000 Corpses.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah, they're not really wrong. And I'm sure Rob Zombie has probably gone on record saying he's drawn inspiration from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the inbred hillbilly family, the mongoloid son, and then just wearing people's faces as a mask. I think this was like the original slasher movie, right? I think this came out before Halloween.
I think Black Christmas predates Black Christmas. Both of them.
I think you're right.
That was going to be my question, was the lack of gore and stuff like that, because they didn't know if people in the theater would go for it.
I think at that time he really didn't need to show that much gore to really freak people out. People were just so much simpler, and they were like cavemen essentially. Where to now it's like, if you don't show people being disemboweled, getting their heads or whatever blown up, it's just, that was nothing.
I will say, I think the biggest inspiration for House of 1,000 Corpses lies right in the fact that he cast Bill Moseley in both House of 1,000 Corpses and what's the one after?
The Devil's Rejects.
Bill Moseley is in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and while he's not playing the same character as the Hitchhiker, he's more or less inspired by the Hitchhiker in the second one. He plays a character by the name of Chop Top.
Yeah, very similar. The metal plate in his head, right?
Like, one of the most annoying characters I've ever seen in a horror film.
For such a highly touted movie, I don't see it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was obviously meant to look like it was shot on a budget, because it was. Leatherface, he's not even that good of a character. Like, obviously, he is the Texas... When you think of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you think of Leatherface. He really doesn't do too much in it.
No.
He has two kills, and then he just runs around screaming.
Yeah. His first two kills are more or less the same exact kill, too.
Yeah. Yeah, not, they're not...
in the head with a mallet.
Right. And yeah, when he first shows up, it's like, holy shit. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Because it comes out of nowhere. It's unannounced. Yeah. It's effective. It looks good. After that, it's just like him squealing. I'm like, man, all right. This has grown old very quickly.
He runs fast for a big boy, though.
Yeah. Was he a football player, the guy who played him?
So it's Gunnar Hansen, and I'll check. By all intents and purposes, the girl should be able to outrun him. Because he's a big dude. Just like, he's tall. And he's kind of, he's heavy. So the girls who are 90 pounds soaking wet should be able to outpace him a little bit.
But again, like I said, he could be built like a lineman. You know, they can get down the line pretty quick if they need to. My favorite part is the truck driver at the end who runs away.
Yes.
Where is he running to?
I think in my notes I have at the end is like, some say that he's still running to this day.
he just books it. It's great. Like, he's never to be seen from again. There's nothing down there, man. You're going nowhere.
He doesn't even hop in the pickup. like that movie's not over technically.
But at the same time, he's the smartest character in the movie.
Yeah, he's just getting the hell out of there.
Yep. He's running for his life. He's Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
One of the notes I had written down was, when I first watched it, it upset me, obviously, because it was, you have a guy wearing a person as a face, as a mask, someone's face as a mask. So that upset me as a kid. But then as you change, this movie upset me because they are talking about how they used to kill cows with sledgehammers. It's like, you hit them once or twice and they don't go down. So you just keep hitting them. Oh, my God. This is a vegan's worst nightmare, this movie. There's chickens with their heads cut off. There's bones everywhere. It's a nightmare.
So they got their point across with you.
They did. They knew. They knew.
Yeah. He did play
Daniel Aquino in 2020 is going to watch this movie.
We're going to get that son of a bitch.
He did play football in high school. There you go. He's 6'4".
Yeah, he looks like he played football, or he should have.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of the movie is after the first mallet kill, that the actor just decided that him just convulsing on the ground is the correct reaction to that.
I think they did that because they did mention when the cows get hit with the mallet, they'll start freaking out. So I wonder if
I didn't make that connection.
Maybe they meant to do that. Maybe they didn't. That's just how I took it.
I mean, it could be. It makes no sense to me. So that's as good of an explanation.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Outside of the actor just over overselling the mallet hit.
I don't know what it's like to get hit in the head with a giant mallet, like a meat mallet. I don't know what that's like. Maybe you do convulse. Yeah, I don't want to try it.
The fact that the other people did not.
Traumatic brain injuries can't cause seizures. There you go.
Okay.
So maybe he hit him just right.
Right. Yeah.
He got him in the good spot.
But yes, I'm assuming that it is connected to what their conversation is while they're in the van. Because they wouldn't be having that conversation if it didn't mean something.
True. Yep. To my last point, and Tobe Hooper directed this movie, and he directed Chainsaw Massacre 2. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is such a huge departure from this movie.
Yep.
It's something you never see. Freddy Krueger went at least 3 or 4 movies before turning just slapstick. They go right into slapstick in the sequel.
The only one that I could think of that does it similarly is The Evil Dead. Evil Dead 2 is very much a comedy.
Yeah, a horror comedy. But even the first Evil Dead, I think, had horror comedy elements in it.
Sure.
And not, it wasn't overtly comedy, but yeah, they did go for more comedy in the second one. The first one is just straight up slasher and freaky. And then the second one is just like, yeah, look at this weird hillbilly family.
I might dislike the second one more than I dislike this movie.
Yeah, because it's more annoying.
It's very annoying.
Yeah. And it's just like annoying nonstop.
Yep. Yep. From as soon as they go into the radio station and terrorize Carolina Williams to the very end, it's just noise.
Yep.
It's just a lot of noise. And I think as I get older, I just realize that turns me off from a movie completely. It's just noise. Yeah. And watching some of these movies this month has kind of got me, because I watched half of Blood and Black Lace, and there was just one scene where just a woman continued to scream for like 3 straight minutes, and I'm just like, I'm about ready to turn this movie off.
Well, I mean, like, that's what this movie is, really. Yeah. It's an hour of kind of just slow build up, a couple kills, and then just 20 minutes of nonstop screaming.
It also has just the dumbest characters of all time.
The most useless characters in any horror movie.
I've never disliked a person in a wheelchair more than I've disliked Franklin.
Yes,
well, I 100%. Mean, he's set up immediately as just like this total waste of a character.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The first thing you see is him just fall down the hillside. Like, oh, yep. This guy's not long. And then he gets cut by the hitchhiker. He's just flat out useless. He gets stuck in a doorway.
Mm-hmm.
Even his friends don't want him around.
No, his sister specifically doesn't want him around, but she can't say it.
Yeah, it's so obvious. It is so obvious that he's a burden on his friends and sister.
Yeah, they even label him in the opening credits thing as invalid.
It's an invalid,
Instead of just handicapped.
Right. Yeah. I mean, John Larroquette, I guess he didn't understand it was offensive at that time.
Things have changed since 1974. They even have that exchange between Sally and him. He's like, admit it, you don't even want me here. And she's like, no, I'm just tired. And then he asks her a question after that, and she's like, what is it?
I probably shouldn't have answered him like that.
Yeah.
I think he's starting to suspect I don't want him around.
But just the fact that they pick up the hitchhiker, it's like, dude's got red all over his face.
Yeah.
Like, no.
All right, I get it, in the 70s, that happened. I get that. Yeah. That's fine. It's realistic. It passes. Him being creepy and weird, okay, whatever. We're still feeling him out. The second he cuts himself with a knife is the second you say, get the fuck out of my van.
Oh, yeah. Because he does so much more after that, too. And then they have to tell the guy to stop the car.
And like, the driver is
screaming.
Right. The driver is totally incompetent. Like, yeah, this guy's like literally cutting himself, and he's just driving like, oh, what a sunny day out. This is beautiful. Look at that.
Then he like starts a fire in the back, and they're just like, all right, well, I'm still driving. And then all of a sudden he slices Franklin, and like, oh my God, stop the car. Like,
now we got to get rid of him.
There's like 4 signs previous to that, everybody, that you should have stopped the car.
Right. He's wearing like a fox's head around his neck as a pouch.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, you don't do that. I get it's like 70s, free love, man. And everything. Yeah, I get it. It's like, be kind to your neighbor, man. What would Jesus do?
That's the one thing that House of 1,000 Corpses solves, the answer. I was like, well, why would you pick up this hitchhiker? I was like, because she's a hot blonde.
Yes. Yeah, this guy was not hot, nor was he blonde.
Yeah, he's no Gutenberg.
He's no Gutenberg, absolutely. he's no Ken Foray.
Yeah.
If it's Ken Foray in short shorts, I mean, you have no choice. That's just the law of the universe.
Yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974 was directed by Tobe Hooper, who would also direct Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Poltergeist, and Life Force, among many others. Stars: Marilyn Burns, Alan Danziger, Paul A. Partain, William Vall, Terry McMinn, Edwin Neal, Jim Saito, Gunnar Hansen, and John Dugan, with opening narration by Night Court's own John Larroquette. For some reason, his first credit on IMDb is the narration of this movie. Yeah,
that's pretty cool, man.
Has an IMDb score of 7.5 and a Rotten Tomato score of 89%. We are in the minority here.
Yeah, it's definitely a hot take.
Yeah. Budget, $300,000. Can you guess how much this movie made?
$10 million.
I'm going to say in the 70s.
Made $30.85 million on a $300,000 budget.
I was going to be way off. I was going to say like 50.
Yeah.
So if my math is correct, that's 100 times its budget.
There you go. That's why they made a second one.
So that's incredible. Yeah. The second one was like 15 years later, wasn't it?
It pretty wasn't close. Right away. Yeah, it wasn't right away. In later sequels, you got Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey, future Oscar winners.
Yep.
And those movies were so bad.
I don't understand the love for this movie. I mean, it's gritty. It feels a little too real, I'll say that. But yeah, it's a lot of nonsense.
It's a lot of noise.
Yeah, it's a lot of noise. I don't know if it holds up. I don't think it does.
I don't think so either. It's probably freaky in the 70s, but I don't think this really scares anyone nowadays.
Right. I would watch this in a drive-in.
I don't even think I would do that.
Yeah.
I'm not excited for this movie.
If like you told me like Evil Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre is playing a double feature drive-in this weekend during the Halloween month, I'm like, okay, I could see myself going to see that.
You didn't say that the Evil Dead would be playing. That's not fair. You changed the rules on me.
Well, you could change your answer.
Right. If you got to say, oh, a really good movie is playing ahead of it? Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Like sure. if Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the best movie of that double feature, probably not. But if it's second build to a better movie, I'm like, yeah. Or Tobe Hooper double feature. Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Poltergeist.
Okay. I could see myself doing that. Poltergeist was good.
But if like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, then no.
Yeah, I'm skipping that all day.
Like, no, thank you.
Pass. Hard pass.
Yeah, the only thing good for this movie for me is that it checks a box on my list for movies everybody says you must watch.
100%. It's like a movie is like, well, you call yourself a horror fan. You haven't seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre. What kind of fan are you?
Yeah, name three of their albums. No, I'm
sorry. Name three of their albums.
You guys want to get into the plot?
Let's absolutely.
All right, Dan, what do you got for us?
Okay, so as I say every week, I'm here to plug our good friend Tia and her podcast, The Top 10 with Tia. It's a weekly podcast where Tia and her friends get together and they discuss top 10 lists. So I believe this upcoming list is top 10 Halloween soundtracks, I believe, is what she was saying. So that's a very interesting one. She was telling us some good ones on there and some ones that I hadn't even thought of. Like some people say The Nightmare Before Christmas is on there. But she had some good picks, so you're going to have to tune in to listen to that one. But you could find her at Geek Vibes Nation. You could also follow her on Twitter at @TC_Stark. Good person, good friend of the podcast, and go check her out.
Okay, and we're going to take a quick break. But before we do, you are going to listen to some messages from friends of the podcast. So we will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Steve.
And this is Adam.
And we're part of the Hop Nation USA podcast,
Pittsburgh's number 3 craft beer podcast.
Join us every Friday for new beer reviews.
We'll talk about the news, history, and homebrewing.
Plus, we'll sit down with the best brewers and industry personalities that'll have us.
So whether you're a casual drinker, a hazy boy hophead,
or even if you're a whale hunting cellar hoarder,
just search Hop Nation USA on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher and join the nation.
All
Oh, hi. Didn't see you there. It's me, George, from the Best Little Horror House in Philly, the show where we talk about the best horror movie ever made, according to our guest at least. We've talked about groundbreaking classics like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Alien, but we've also got a lot of great ones coming up, including some very fun guests like Len Kabaczynski of Swamp Zombies and Red Letter Media fame, Caroline Williams, the star of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and Chase Williamson from John Dies at the End. So make sure you're subscribed to the Best Little Horror House in Philly, and I'll see you boils and ghouls over there.
And welcome back, and now it's time to get into the plot for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We open on a disclaimer previewing what we're about to see and what befalls our characters, narrated, as we mentioned, by John Larroquette. We then see a series of camera flashes revealing up-close shots of a decomposing body, and see it in full during the daytime, two corpses situated on a headstone monument as a sort of work of art, as the radio report says. And then we get credits as the radio report continues. The credits play over abstract red and black imagery, and the radio report is of nothing in particular. Various stories from around the country, including a cholera outbreak in San Francisco, apparently. We then fade back into a dead armadillo on the side of the road as the radio report slowly fades out. A group of teens in a van pull over to the side of the road, setting up a ramp so that one of the teens who's in a wheelchair could get out and take a piss in a coffee can. As he pees, a semi-truck zooms past them, kicking up dirt, which knocks Franklin, the kid in the wheelchair, down a hill, because he is completely helpless. Later in the back of the van, and one of the girls talks about some astrology, about Mercury being in retrograde or some bullshit like that.
Yeah, that's a red flag, by the way, to any guy out there.
That put this movie very much in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, even now.
Yeah.
If you find yourself a girl and she starts talking about anything being in retrograde, run for the hills, dude.
Yeah, because that she's just going to use that as an excuse for being an asshole.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for just, like, bitching you out.
That planet's running in reverse.
I'm sorry. I'm a Cancer. My chakra wasn't aligned. Hey. You gotta give me a pass on that. No, we don't.
If you know anything about astrology, Cancerians are not hostile creatures. As two Cancerians are on this podcast.
I just picked one. Don't
fuck
call
you,
me
Dan.
On my bullshit.
Fuck you, Dan.
We just talked about being called out on our bullshit, too. I stepped right into it.
Eventually, they wind up at a cemetery, which is, for some reason, an extraordinarily busy cemetery. Yeah. A whole bunch of hicks just hanging around, drinking beers. One of the girls hops out, nipples first, and asks how to find her grandfather, who was buried there. And one of the locals grabs her by the arm and forcibly brings her along to, I guess, wherever her grandfather is buried. As a drunk local talks to the others about nonsense, as Texas drunks will do to you.
It must be a very 70s thing that these guys just hang out, I guess, by a graveyard hoping that pretty girls come by wanting to see graves. Like, is that what the whole point here is?
I don't know. Look, there was way too many people in that graveyard. That's all I know. In the middle of the day. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a Texas thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a redneck thing. I don't know.
I think maybe it's just this movie thing.
Yeah. We need rednecks here for some reason. I don't know. We'll figure out that out. But first, let's lose this girl's bra.
First things first.
She burned
that bra. Yeah, it's true. 1974. The first close-up. The first character that gets close-up in this movie is this girl's nipples. But as they continue to drive after the cemetery, the girl mentions that their grandfather's grave, because she's talking to Franklin, the guy in a wheelchair, looks untouched, so they don't have to worry about the grave robbing that's been going on, as the radio had reported. They pass by a disgusting smell, and Franklin says that it's the slaughterhouse. Then he goes into detail about how they used to kill cattle and how they are now use air guns to kill cattle nowadays. So then immediately after that, they spot a hitchhiker and decide to pick him up. Like the last guy you'd ever want to pick up from the side of the road. And Franklin makes mention that this guy, they just picked up Dracula.
It looks nothing like Dracula, by the way.
There's no discernible reason to pick up this guy.
Yeah, he's the walking embodiment of a danger sign.
Yeah, different time and place, maybe. Again, 1974, maybe it was just commonplace that, you know, maybe it's bad chakra, bad karma to not pick up a hitchhiker.
I guess. I'm glad that's one law that they passed, and that's one that I will always follow.
Yeah. Have you guys ever seen a hitchhiker?
I don't think so, no.
No.
And it's never a hot blonde, by the way.
No,
it's never. In real life, it's, you know, it's some, like, weird overweight dude.
I mean, who knows? We've never, none of us have ever seen a hitchhiker.
I'm just, because in real life, that's what happens.
Yeah. That's kind of always kind of like in movies, like you, when you get stuck in the middle seat of an airplane, it's like, oh man, hot chick sits next down next to you. Never.
Never. No. I don't think hot chicks fly planes, to be honest with you.
Nope. They get a charter. There's an attractiveness level that just only charters planes.
Yeah, 100%.
So the hitchhiker then goes into even more gory detail about the life at the slaughterhouse, especially how they make head cheese, which is a thing that as a meat eater, I would never eat.
It just proves my point. I'm telling you, this movie is just a huge sign. Like, don't do it, man. It's terrible.
So then Franklin, for some reason, just takes out his pocket knife and starts fiddling with it. And then the hitchhiker gleefully takes it out of his hand and then cuts his own hand wide open. Hitchhiker takes out his own knife after giving back Franklin's to show everyone. And then he takes out an old-timey camera and takes a picture of the group. It's just like one after another moments that he does. Then he asks him to take him to his house because it's real close, and then invites them to dinner because his brother makes great head cheese. They refuse his dinner invite, so then he tries to sell them the picture he took, which they don't want. So then he sets it down, pours gunpowder of some sort on it, and lights it on fire. Then he takes out the knife again, slices Franklin's arms out, and they finally kick him out of the van.
After strike three that, right there, man.
There's so many strikes.
It's probably strike four or five at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said before, once he takes the knife from Franklin and cuts himself with it, that's essentially, please exit the vehicle.
It's like, oh, I think we're at your stop.
This is where you depart, sir.
Yeah.
This is where we part ways, never to be seen again.
Yeah. So they kick the hitchhiker out, and then the van slowly drives away with the hitchhiker kicking against the side and sticking his tongue out at them. So frustrating.
Yeah. Was the driver trying to obey traffic laws, I guess?
Like, I don't know.
I have to merge. I can't just go.
I was half expecting, because I haven't seen this in a while, I was half expecting the hitchhiker to just slash the tires.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. That's what I was like. He could have easily done it.
Yeah. I forgot that that's not how they get into this situation.
Right. He's probably going 2 miles an hour at this point. And I'm not exaggerating. He's crawling, literally crawling away from the psycho.
He gives the hitchhiker every opportunity to do whatever he will with the van.
Yeah. Luckily, it's just his idea is just to bleed on it.
Yep. Yeah. Which never, it actually never comes into play.
They talk about it and that's it. Like, yeah. Oh, you know, I wonder if that guy's going to follow us.
Yeah. They keep like trying to make it a thing.
Right.
Like
they keep showing it like he's marked the vehicle in some way of like, all right, now everybody knows who to get, but it never comes into play.
Right.
No. It's like Franklin looking at it, thinking that it's like got a like a symbol or something.
Yeah. So Franklin's sister, after they drive away, patches his arm up as the other girl continues to read from the astrology book. Essentially, none of their horoscopes are particularly positive. They then pull into a gas station, where an enormous skulled redneck washes their windshield as an older guy comes out. He mentions that they don't have any gas in the tanks and the truck is probably a few hours away. Franklin asks the old guy about an old house, says that his dad owns it. And the old man says they don't want to go around poking their noses in an old house, especially with the women folk around. Women folk don't want to go poking around old houses. So he tells them to come in, have some barbecue. Truck won't be that long. Have some food and just wait for the truck there. They get some food and then they leave. With plans to come back later, they decide to go find the old house by themselves. And they make it to the old house and they pile up. Franklin sees the blood stain the hitchhiker left on the van, wondering if the guy is using the mark to follow them. And I wanted nothing more than for Franklin to just eat the fucking sausage in the scene. So he has a sausage sticking out of his mouth this entire scene. And I wanted nothing more than him to just finish that fucking sausage. So the rest of the group explores the abandoned house, and it's pretty run down. There's rot, a spider's nest in one of the rooms. Meanwhile, they leave Franklin downstairs to fend for himself, and he is the most unlikable character in a wheelchair in any movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, I like how they just leave him in the doorway. He can't conquer a doorway. It's not that hard, man.
Yeah.
I've seen handicapped people enter and exit a doorway.
Yeah.
Even just with a door. This one had no door on it.
Yeah, it's more of an archway.
Yeah. It's an opening. That's it. And he's defeated by like a slight bump.
Yeah. But you just don't feel bad for Franklin, do you?
You don't. You really don't. He's not a likable guy.
He then sees some ominous leavings like a dead bird and some sort of totem that's been hanging in the doorway. some Pam and Kirk, the other two, go walking around outside exploring the grounds, and they come across a neighboring house. They come across a lot full of abandoned cars and some ramshackle roofs. They eventually come across a generator that is running, but do not see anyone. So they make it to the front door of the neighbor's house and knock on the door for some reason.
70s. Kirk...
Yeah, I was going to say, everyone went everywhere they wanted. Yeah. Just going into people's houses, picking up random dangerous people.
Mm-hmm.
There were no borders, dude.
Kirk finds a tooth on the porch and gives it to Pam as a prank. She freaks out and goes to sit on the porch swing, far away from Kirk. So Kirk continues to knock on the door, and the door creaks open. And Kirk is stupid, so he shouts into the house, but no answer. Then he jogs toward this weird wall full of animal skulls, trips on a ramp, and then Leatherface pops up out of nowhere, smacking Kirk in the head with a mallet.
I gotta say, this kill here, I liked it a lot just because there was, like, there's no foreplay leading up to this.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, it's like, you don't even know about a killer or anything like that, and all of a sudden this guy pops out and just mallets him, and the guy's dead.
Yeah, this is the most lasting scene.
It's
an
iconic, it's definitely an iconic scene.
Because it's just like, what the fuck just happened? You know, who's this dude? Where the fuck did he take him? It's an effective scene, I will say. As a person that doesn't really enjoy this movie this much, this is an effective scene. Yeah, although
it's the one scene I remember.
Kirk is fucking stupid.
Well, it's cool because everything about it was like the sickening sound of the mallet hitting his head.
Yeah.
Him spazzing out. And then the way that Leatherface slams the door. It's all of it works well. It makes sense why that's such an iconic scene. Mm-hmm. But that's it.
Yeah.
That's all you really get.
It's also very, even if, let's say, the seizuring isn't technically accurate, it winds up it is, but if it wasn't, it's still a very effective part of that. Like, it's unnerving to see a guy just kind of like flop around like a fish,
right? Yeah, like he's in his death spasms essentially.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Again, if you see a wall of skulls, you don't jog towards it.
Nope,
you jog backwards.
Yeah, you're like, oh well, all right, well, I'll just leave you guys to doing what you're doing.
Goodbye. Yeah. That's what you say. You don't say hello, you say goodbye.
Mm-hmm. So he jogs towards a weird red. Kirk goes down in a heap, convulsing. Leatherface smacks him again, then drags him into the back room and slams a metal sliding door shut. Then Pam, calling after Kirk, goes looking for him. She walks into the house and she walks into another room. Comes across like a weird room with a chicken in a cage and bones and feathers all over the floor. After taking in the entire room for what feels like an eternity, Pam starts to freak out. She goes to run, but as she exits the room, the sliding door opens and Leatherface is back. She gets to the porch before Leatherface grabs her, but he grabs her and carries her back in. He then drops her on a meat hook and grabs a chainsaw. As I mentioned, this was a lot less graphic than I had remembered. But then back of the van, the rest of the group is still waiting for Kirk and Pam.
Do you want to hear how desensitized my wife is now? Because she's been playing Dead by Daylight. Her first thought wasn't, oh my God, that's crazy. It's, you can never do that. The meat hook swings too much. Like, oh my God, sweetheart, you are a psychopath.
So Daniel, I had the same thought.
Did you? Well, yeah, I guess you two with your just crazy way of thinking, it's not, oh my God, that looks so painful. You can never do that.
Yeah, that's not how those hooks work.
That's not how that goes. Gotcha. I have to make sure to not piss you guys off.
So back at the van, the rest of the group is still waiting for Kirk and Pam. Franklin mentions that he can't find his knife, and then Jerry goes looking for them as Franklin and Sally wait at the van. Jerry winds up at the front door of the neighbor's house. He hears a woman's laugh through the screen door, so he walks into the house. He admires the red wall and walks into the room with the meat hooks, and then he hears something coming from the meat freezer. So he opens it up and Pam pops out of it, though I'm pretty sure she's dead, so I don't really know why she does.
They needed a jump scare, right?
Yeah. But at the same moment, Leatherface storms into the room and smacks Jerry in the head with a mallet. We're just doing things all over again.
And then just shoves her back in. Like,
shoves her back in there. And then he has some sort of mini freak out before he eventually settles down. He has a little crisis of sanity there, Leatherface.
That's awesome.
He's like, I could kill two people, but three.
This is just getting ridiculous now.
This day is for the birds, guys.
Where are they all coming from?
It's now nighttime, and Sally and Franklin are still waiting by the van. The lights are on in the van, so all I was thinking about, they're going to drain that fucking battery.
your one means of escape.
They call out for Jerry, thinking he might be lost, and Franklin tries to convince Sally that they should go to the gas station and get some help there. Sally and Franklin fight over the flashlight, and Franklin realizes that the keys to the van are gone, so they wouldn't even be able to get to the gas station if they wanted to. So, Sally unfortunately has to drag her brother through the woods to go looking for Jerry in the dark. As they go stomping through the woods, Leatherface shows up and just buries his chainsaw right into Franklin's chest.
I wish you'd see it, though. You don't see it.
You see nothing. Yeah. Franklin gets it the worst, I think, out of everybody.
He gets it in the chest, in the arm. He gets it good.
Yeah. So Sally runs with Leatherface chasing after her. Sally runs towards the only light she can see, running through brush with Leatherface hot on her heels, which is like 60% of this movie. She winds up at the house, first trying to get it through the back door, but then makes it through the front. So rather than go through the red door, she runs upstairs as Leatherface saws through the front door. Upstairs, she goes into a room and sees what we think are two dead bodies sitting in chairs. Runs back to the stairs as Leatherface makes his way through the door. She runs back up the stairs with him in pursuit, and she jumps through a window into the ground below. She is unfazed by breaking through glass, which probably should just cut her to ribbons, and nor the fall, which, as we saw from Beyond, Barbara Crampton broke her leg in a similar fall. She's fine. The chase continues outside as Sally once again finds herself running through the woods in the dark and Leatherface chasing after her.
Through this whole scene, it felt like you should have like Benny Hill music playing over this chase, because it feels like he's slowing down on purpose just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing with the hitchhiker.
Definitely at the end.
Yeah, he had plenty of chances to catch her. And I was like, I guess he's like fucking with her, you know? Yeah. But he had her, dude.
He's like in a brisk jog.
Right. He had her.
Yeah. And he's just kind of like slashing at her from behind with his knife.
Yeah.
But I don't think Leatherface, I don't think that's his MO, right? He hasn't shown that yet.
I don't know what his MO is, really. I think he's inbred, so he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's just not smart enough to figure things out.
Right.
He's the muscle. He's not paid to think.
Sure. So Sally makes it all the way to the gas station and pushes through the door where the old man is still there. And then he picks her up and puts her in a chair, and she says someone outside chasing her. So he looks outside telling her that there's no one outside. He says he's going to get his truck and we're going to get out of here. So he gets his truck, and while he's getting his truck, she's seeing all the barbecue, which I'm guessing is human meat?
They don't specifically say.
Right.
It's
Soylent Green. Right. People. It just seems like that's where we're going with this movie.
Yeah, I think that's what at least we're supposed to pick up on, right? Because that look of realization comes across her face, like, man, I made the wrong move here.
So he comes with his truck and he comes in with a burlap sack with every intention of just putting her in that sack.
Not thinking
that she's going to fight back. So she grabs a knife off the counter and they fight. He grabs a broom, knocks the knife out of her hand with the broom, and eventually knocks her out with the handle. It's like, man, Sally, you need a little more fight in you. To get knocked out by a broom handle is just silly.
Yeah. She puts up less than a fight.
Yeah. So he ties her up and gags her, puts a bag over her head and drags her out to his truck. And he drives her back to the house. A hitchhiker shows up, and the old man beats him, telling him that he almost got himself caught. The old man drives up to the porch, and the old man tells the hitchhiker to grab the girl. So he does, and brings her inside, tying her to a chair. And the old man starts ordering Leatherface around, too, who is now dressed like some sort of woman. He's got a wig.
I think he's like the grandmother.
Yeah.
Or the mother.
It gets weird. It gets weird.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. I mean, it's already weird, but
right.
They crank it up to 11.
So the hitchhiker and Leatherface head upstairs and bring down Grandpa, who was one of the quote-unquote dead bodies we saw upstairs. So they set him down at the kitchen table and then cut Sally's hand open and let him suck on her blood, which is probably one of the most disturbing moments of this movie.
I was thinking to myself, like, this is weird, but somewhere, someone out there is like, that's their thing.
Yep.
Old people sucking on younger girls, like, that's my thing, man. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, well, that's unfortunate.
I mean, we can point out what it is and how it looks, but we never kink shame. We will never shame anybody.
No, that's not what we do here.
Nope, not at all. But from fear, Sally passes out. Eventually, she wakes up and she is still tied to a chair at the table. Sitting with her is the hitchhiker, the old man, Leatherface, and Grandpa. And she screams, and the hitchhiker and Leatherface scream with her, mocking her for what feels like an eternity. She pleads with the old man, and then the hitchhiker and Leatherface start pawing at her. And then there's just a really long period of time where she just screams and the hitchhiker laughs at her. The old man laughs too.
This is obviously the moment where I got reminded of Resident Evil 7, the game, because it's a very similar tied up while they're eating. The only thing they didn't do, and remind me if I'm wrong, but they didn't try to feed her, right?
She has a plate of food, but they don't try and force feed her or anything like that.
Yeah, that's the only thing that happens in that game that doesn't happen here.
Yeah, you could cut this scene down by like 3 solid minutes.
Yeah.
The old man gets fed up a little bit with the screaming and he goes to leave. And then the hitchhiker gets the idea to let Grandpa kill Sally.
I wanted someone to hit me over the head with a meat mallet.
So they untie her from the chair and make her stand over an empty bucket, like they're gonna let the blood go into there. Meanwhile, they keep trying to hand Grandpa the mallet, but he's basically a corpse at this point, so he has some difficulty grabbing it. Eventually, the scene takes so long that Sally struggles enough that she breaks loose from the hitchhiker and then jumps through another window. She jumps through two windows in this
movie. Jen goes, has she ever heard of the door?
And these are old school American made windows.
They'll cut you to shreds.
Like double pain. So Sally runs towards the road. This jump from the first floor, for some reason, she hurts her ankle on this one. So now she's slow, but she's got the hitchhiker and Leatherface chasing after her. Hitchhiker is kind of toying with her. He catches up to her eventually, slashes her a couple times, and grabs her as she runs into the middle of the road. And he is run over by a cattle truck, even though he has plenty of time to move. But
like
he
gets seen from Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Stop.
But he gets it good. Every tire hits.
All 18 wheels.
Yeah. The cattle truck driver gets out and sees Leatherface chasing after Sally. So he jumps back into his cab and pulls Sally in while Leatherface tries to put the chainsaw through the door. The driver and Sally jump out the passenger side and the driver takes a wrench with him. So the driver and Sally go running down the road with Leatherface chasing after them. The driver throws the wrench, hitting Leatherface in the head, which makes him fall down, cuts a gash into his own leg with the saw. So then a pickup truck driver drives by and Sally jumps into the road to get it to slow down. She jumps into the flatbed just as Leatherface gets close to her. The pickup truck drives away, bringing Sally to safety. I'm assuming the cattle truck driver is still running to this day. And that is the end. None of the bad guys get it in the end, so they survive for a sequel. That's the end of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's an unpleasant experience.
Yeah, the ending's right. I know that there's a pretty famous scene of Leatherface just waving the chainsaw around.
I was going to say, I think I've seen that before without ever seeing the movie.
Yeah.
And her in the flatbed.
But it's, my God, it's exhausting, the final scene of this, the final act of this movie. Just screaming and hollering and hooting and an old man trying to hit someone with a mallet. And it's just so, so awfully boring and anticlimactic. The real hero of this movie is the truck driver, because he's a hot shot with that wrench. Dude's a regular Hawkeye over here. I just he has no lines, throws the wrench, and books it. He's my favorite character in like any horror movie, because that's what a real person would do. Like, fuck you, and then run. But my goodness, there's just so much happening, and it's just all loud noises.
Yeah, I mean, we got through this plot really quickly because of that. A lot of it could be summed up in short sentences. Like, this happens, and then this happens, and that's the end of the movie. I don't feel like it holds up as well as some of its contemporary films. Like, I think The Exorcist is a good example of a movie that holds up. Obviously, it's different. The Exorcist is a studio-produced film. It won 2 Academy Awards. It was nominated for, like, 10 total, I think. So, obviously, that's different, and this was made on $300,000. So, I appreciate what they were able to accomplish and the fact that, like we said, it made 100 times its budget.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good for them. Good for Tobe Hooper. It's just not a fun watch. Like, if you asked me to name my 10 top horror films of all time, this wouldn't come close. I wouldn't even consider this anywhere near it.
I agree. Yeah. It's a slog.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would imagine, and now this is something we could never be able to find out or know for sure, is that being in that time period and seeing this in the movie for the first time, just the visuals of it being on the big screen is why maybe it got the reputation. Like, one of those things that got it because of when it came out. And then it's one of those things where people just go, oh, yeah, that movie's great. Yeah,
Yeah, I'm sure there's like an aspect of it was people were coming out of the theaters just like, was that, did we just watch like a fucking snuff film?
Right.
You know, for the time, this is extreme, you know. Maybe not even as extreme as The Last House on the Left. I haven't seen The Last House on the Left in a long time. I don't even know what to say like to make this movie better. I really don't know if there's anything that could be said for that, to be honest with you.
I think what makes this movie better is what they did in the remake with Jessica Alba. Because Jessica Biel, I'm sorry. Yeah, Jessica Biel. They added Arlie Ermey, yes. He's like an inbred cop who is part of the family.
He's essentially like the old man in this from this movie.
Yeah. So, I mean, it even shows you like they have the law essentially on their side here. Mm-hmm. So you're really screwed there. He's awesome in it. It's a little gorier. You see the kills better. I think that's what makes it better in the long run, where you can actually see the chainsaw doing damage other than just a back shot of it.
Mm.
I think that's what, in my opinion, I enjoyed the remake better than the original. But I'm with you, Ant. I get what it's done for the horror genre in terms of a low budget becoming mainstream and showing us an iconic killer. When in reality, should he be iconic? Because the first movie is probably the best out of all of them. And he just becomes like super slapsticky in the other movies. But I get it. I can appreciate what it did, this movie. But obviously, I'm going to let Mark do his thing. And I have a question for you guys after Mark is ready.
Okay.
So basically, all I was going to say with this movie is that I guess there was some inspiration for how wheelchair deaths should go in Mac and Me from this movie. Is that you just show it from the back and not have any blood?
The uncut Mac and Me, no. The uncut Mac and Me.
But yeah, there's nothing you... The only thing that could really be done is a little bit more budget, a little bit more gore, but you weren't going to get that in 1974 with where this movie came from. So,
sure.
So that's about the only things that can... That's why the remakes have been made, is because the premise of the story is good, the outline of it, but you have to fill in a lot better and make it more compelling than the original does.
All right, Dan, hit us with your question.
So if we are in this situation, you, your wife, my wife, Mark.
Am I in a wheelchair?
You can be in the wheelchair if you like. You don't have to be.
Maybe crutches.
Crutches. Yeah, maybe you just like have a pulled hamstring, Mark. We'll say that.
Got it.
What order do you think we die in?
Jen dies first.
Jen dies first. I was going to say I die first, and then Jen dies.
Okay. I figured she'd be the first one in the house.
Okay.
I feel like she's got that curiosity aspect to her. She was like, ooh, this is kind of weird. Let's check out this house. And like,
skulls.
Boom. Yeah. Like, ooh, this is weird. And then like Leatherface just boom, surprise, bitch. Boom.
But and then she gets to go out the way she always wanted to, getting hung on a meat hook.
Yeah.
And she could tell Leatherface, this is not how it's done.
Ah. And then probably you going in after Jen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like Mark and Lynn will be the last, too. I think I'm dying next.
I was going to say Lynn makes it out.
Yeah.
Lynn's the one who survives. Mark gets caught in the woods.
Although, to be honest with you, on the outside, the house was pretty nice looking. Lynn will be like, oh, well, maybe, you know. Maybe the house is for sale. Let's go check it out.
I'm either going to get sucked in by the house, or I'm going to be the coward and just go, sorry, Lynn, bye. And
yeah. Just run. Yeah. I would pull a Grandpa Simpson as soon as I saw that red wall. Like, doop, doop, doop.
Yeah. Hat off, hat back on.
Yep. Yeah, walk That's back funny. Over to me and Lynn. Oh.
It's like, nope, we're just going to walk, like, we're going back to the road, right?
Yeah.
They're dead. I found their bodies. They're dead. We're going to go. Yeah.
Okay. That,
and you just keep walking. Just don't even stop to see if we're following you.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention, like, how nice the hitchhiker's teeth were. That kind of took me out of it a little bit.
I honestly don't even remember how his teeth looked. He had that big red blotch on his face, and that's all I could really pay attention to.
I was like, man, they really couldn't give him like little fake teeth, because like those are some pearly whites.
Well, listen, just because he eats humans doesn't mean he doesn't take care of his dental, you know, hygiene.
I guess. I figured that would be the first thing.
You might be right. I don't know.
All right. I think this is all we have to talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You guys want to plug your shit?
Yeah, absolutely. My Twitter account is at DeAquino122. Follow our Real Play D&D account, Stranger Damies, at Stranger Damies, and that's on Twitter and Instagram. And that is it for me.
Mark. Yeah. So we have our D&D podcast, Stranger Damies, airs every Wednesday. Episode that aired before this will be the first of our Halloween one-shot that Ant does every year. So be sure to check that out. We can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Stranger Damies. We have our gaming podcast, The Game Vault Pod, that airs every other Monday. We have an episode that just aired on Monday, so be sure to check that out. And we do stream at Game Vault Pod, which is where you can find us on all socials and on Twitch. And we do it Wednesday, Thursdays, one of Friday or Saturday, and then Sunday and every other Monday. So just check out Game Vault Pod on Twitter for the schedule and any changes, any surprise streams or anything like that. But most importantly, what we're doing, I guess it would be next weekend at this point, because time doesn't mean anything in 2020, would be Extra Life. We do a 24-hour gaming marathon to help raise money for the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. That will be Saturday, November 7th at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll start out with a session of Stranger Damies, and then we'll go into playing video games for the next 24 hours. You can donate by going to tinyurl.com/extralife5. So be sure to donate there. Like I said, if you can't donate, perfectly fine. We understand. If you can, signal boost us or join us in the chat. Either way, it'll be perfectly fine helping us out. If you can donate, you can do it anytime between now and December 31st. But if you don't have a time limit or you're not waiting to get paid or anything like that, that you'll be paid after November 7th, I would recommend doing your donations on that day, just because we're going to be striving for some goals and have some special things tied to them. You may be able to bid for things to have us do and stuff like that. So it might be better to hold your stuff until that Saturday to just see what you can either make us do or make us play or something like that. Once again, Saturday, November 7th, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find us at tinyurl.com/extralife5.
Okay, great. And we are They Called Us a Movie. You can find us at theycalledusamovie.podbean.com and on all podcast streaming apps just by searching They Called Us a Movie. We are themaindamie.com. You can find us at all socials by searching The Main Damie. This is 31 Days of Horror. We're just wrapping up 31 Days of Horror, but you could go to themaindamie.com and find all the articles we've written this month, as well as all our past 31 Days of Horror podcast episodes. We're also a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com and on all socials and podcast streaming apps just by searching Geek Vibes Nation. Bunch of great shows besides us: Scene and Nerd, Gunning the Sacred Cow, Top 10 with Tia. If you're into geek stuff, there's something for everyone. You could hit us up at themaindamie@gmail.com. Questions, comments, you want to suggest a movie for us? Go right ahead. I am at Ant Delvec on Twitter. You can hit me up there. And that's going to wrap it up. This has been They Called Us a Movie, and this was The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, directed by Toby Hooper. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony Delvecchio telling Toby Hooper, well, you certainly made a movie, didn't you?